This is Jay Sekulow. A lot of activity going on in Washington, D.C., including negotiations for border security and immigration.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. As I said, there's a lot going on in Washington. And, of course, this is coming after the State of the Union message. The question that I think is pretty much paramount right now is, what is the next move on the shutdown? Because the shutdown is looming. I mean, there is a shutdown scheduled to go in effect, was it, Jordan, next week?
Yeah, next Friday.
So, but there is negotiations going on. So let's first start the discussion with what is happening on the negotiation front.
So the negotiations are being led by a bipartisan committee of the House and the Senate, all appropriators. Senator Shelby's kind of been out front as the Republican spokesperson from that. They haven't shared a lot of information other than they believe they're close to their proposal. That's all they come up with is a proposal. And the question is, do they come up with? He thinks that they will, but there's no certainty yet that they absolutely come up with a bipartisan proposal. Then the question is that bipartisan proposal one that's acceptable to the president, to Pelosi, and to Mitch McConnell to the point where they would have a vote on it? So they would allow a vote and would it pass? And so there's a lot of big questions out there about this. It could be that this kind of settles the issue. If this proposal comes out, includes funding for border barriers and also immigration reforms, this could be a major breakthrough. That being said, if we base this on what Washington and Congress specifically have been able to get done on this issue in the past, that's all signs point to probably not. So,
but now there's also
careful
statements.
Language being used.
Yeah. So Nancy Pelosi's making statements, right? So we have the statement. So let's take a listen to what we have.
I have confidence in the appropriators, not because I know what they're doing, but because I have confidence in the appropriations process, being an appropriator myself, knowing left to their own devices, as I've said over and over again, that the appropriators in a bipartisan way and a bicameral way, House and Senate, can come to a fair conclusion, which I would support. I hope I have asked the administration to be as non-interventionist as I am on that. Just let them do their work.
All right, so let me answer this question. So here's, I think, that's the obvious question here. And Andy, that is, what if the work includes a compromise which includes funding for a border secure, a barrier?
But she has left herself enough wiggle room, Jay, that I think she can always back out of that. But, you know, the way I read it is that if the appropriators come up with something that does include a barrier, I heard her say she would support it. So that means she's kind of put herself in a position of saying what the appropriators come up with on both sides in this committee, that I would be behind it. But, you know, I don't always trust what these people, these politicians say, especially Nancy Pelosi.
All right. So, Jordan, where do you think this actually ends up?
I think the big question is, does this committee come up with a bipartisan solution? If it does, did part of that solution include border barriers? What kind? You know, how much is the funding there? Is it at least the $5.7 billion? And then if you get to that point, then Nancy Pelosi is really up against the wall because she said, I would support this. We know a lot of her caucus would support this. Plenty of moderate Democrats would support immigration reform, and even liberal Democrats would support immigration reform coupled with sub-border barriers being built.
But she makes it seem, she said, I've asked the administration to be as non-interventionist as I am.
Well, she's acting like she doesn't know what's going on. I don't believe that. She's a Speaker of the House. She might not know the details of day-to-day, but come on.
She knows what's going on. She's trying to say, I'm not an interventionist in this, and the president shouldn't be either. But don't worry, she knows.
All right, well, coming up, we're going to talk more about what's going on in Washington. We're taking your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. ACLJ went to Vermont, basically, yesterday on pro-life issues. We're going to talk about that coming up in the next segment of the broadcast. But we also want your calls and comments, 1-800-684-3110. How important is, do you think, that we avoid the shutdown? How important is to get border security? And what do you think about the pro-life stance that we are now not, we've been advocating it for 30 years, folks, but we're taking it to a whole different level. We want to get your read on how important that is to you. 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
The The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now, other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledged to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We talked about what's going on in Washington right now, but let me take you to Vermont. Why Vermont? Because we have, you know, we've been involved in pro-life aspects of legal work for well over three decades. And I'm going back to the 1980s. And one of my colleagues, Pat Monahan, going back to the 1970s. This is something we've been involved in for a long time. Now, we mentioned to you on the broadcast yesterday that Vermont was considering legislation and we wanted to get our voice in. So first, let me take you back, and I'm going to have Abby set up exactly what was going on in Vermont, and then I'll tell you what we did. So, Abby, what is at stake with this Vermont legislation?
Okay, so with the Vermont legislation, the attempts being made by Democrats are to remove the obstacles to late-term abortion till birth, essentially, and to also remove some of the criminal and civil penalties for aborting the child too late.
So the bill's actually entitled this. I think the language of these bills are interesting. The one in Massachusetts, you've got one in Massachusetts, removing obstacles and to expand abortion access. So it seems to me that and obviously it's Planned Parenthood and NARAL, because Planned Parenthood sent out a fundraiser yesterday, abortion is healthcare, period. That's their fundraiser. That you've got these states, we're talking about very late-term abortions. I mean, abortions during the delivery process here.
Right. That's exactly. They're removing the obstacles to that. In one state, it's three physicians have to agree. In another state, there are criminal penalties for aborting the child as the child is being born.
All those are being removed?
So all of those are being removed.
So, Andy, it goes back to what we said yesterday, and that is, as a prosecutor, if you remove the parameters of criminal liability or civil liability, or in these cases, what Abby's saying is both. I mean, there's basically no liability.
Right.
Well, then something doesn't happen right. Something goes wrong. What happens?
Well, nothing. A prosecutor has no right to do anything. I mean, it is, in a sense, it is legalizing the act of infanticide and the crime of murder. That's exactly what this does, because a prosecutor has no discretion at this point, if this Vermont legislation passes, to decide whether a homicide has been committed. It has not. And therefore, we can't prosecute these kinds of crimes.
So in Vermont, we actually filed a written testimony on behalf of, ready for this, in a very short period of time, 88,400 people, which goes back to, I'm going to go to the substance of what we said in a moment, but I want to go back to grassroots politics. We keep talking about that. Here, in a matter of literally hours, we almost got 100,000 signatures, probably close to that now. 88,400 signatures in literally hours.
I think that's because the issue is back into the mainstream discussion. It's not just within our movements or conservative movements or pro-life movements or even in church or religious discussions about it, moral discussions about it, but it's back in the forefront of politics and legislating. And as a reminder to people, it's at their state level. That's where a lot of this action is taken. As we see, Congress has an inability to act right now on this. It's because one senator can object on any kind of unanimous consent. You've still got the 60-vote threshold for legislation in the Senate, so you don't have enough of a pro-life majority, even in the Republican Senate, to pass a lot of significant legislation. Though the president would sign it, it's not getting to the desk, just like the defunding of Planned Parenthood ultimately wouldn't get through, even with the Republican House and Senate back in the Obamacare discussion. So I think you look at what the states are doing, and you've got blue states trying to expand abortion and red states trying to put some restrictions in place.
Yeah, we're going
to
talk about
the only states that will be taken to court are those red states. They're trying to put restrictions in place.
Yeah, so let's take a look at in Vermont. So we said yesterday this bill was going on. Let me read you the very beginning of what we wrote. For the reasons set forth here in the American Center for Law and Justice, on behalf of over 88,400 concerned citizens, including 140 citizens from Vermont, have signed our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws, urge that Vermont legislatures vote no on Bill H-57. So what do we say in our legal position?
So the first position that we note is that abortion is a grave offense against justice because it entails the deliberate killing of an innocent human life. And we go on to explain that, in fact, I'll just read it. A justification of abortion must fundamentally rest on the proposition that some members of the human race do not have even the most basic of human rights, the right to live.
So this goes back to the personhood argument that we said, this is where it has to go. The life issue has to go to this issue of personhood, because they're even passing bills or trying to pass bills with legislation that says the unborn child will not be deemed a person, or the fetus will not be deemed anyone an entity entitled to constitutional rights.
Right. It will be deemed a product. That is literally the terms in one of the state's legislation, a product.
Yeah. So that. And the reason they're doing that is they know that especially with these late term abortions, they're in a very difficult spot. I mean, we're completely pro life here at the ACLJ, obviously. But for those people, even these legislatures, they know that the unborn child in the eighth month, and there's an abortion, that is the taking of a human life. With what they're saying is no, we're redefining human life so that human life does not include the unborn child, which raises the question. They call it, you said, product.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you could call it whatever you want. That does not mean that that's what the constitutional protection, how it vests. But that's why we got to fight for personhood. Go ahead.
Right. We also address the false narrative by Planned Parenthood that, and this was in their letter last night, the lies, cruelty, and complete disregard for real experiences of pregnant women. That's what Planned Parenthood is asserting, that restrictions on abortion, that's what they are. So we address that in our letter, and we explain that in the years since abortion has become widespread, the negative medical effects on women seeking abortion are extensive. And we go into some significant detail about what those are, such as abortion, especially when repeated, increases the odds that future pregnancy will miscarry and result in premature births. We go into the physical and mental negative effects of women who seek abortions. We spend two pages just discussing that this is not about the health of the woman and the right of the woman to choose. The evidence overwhelmingly demonstrates the harm that comes to women who obtain abortions.
So here's the issue, as I look at it. You said something very important, Jordan, that is there are states like North Carolina. Abby is filing a very much a pro-life bill. They're trying to prohibit restrictions in place on abortion. There are other states that are doing that. Those are the ones that will get challenged.
Yeah, that's right. North Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Kentucky, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee all have legislation that's been proposed. Now, interesting enough, in Ohio, this was legislation that's been proposed twice. It was John Kasich, no longer the governor, who vetoed it because in his mind, he said he didn't disagree with it. It's one of those arguments we see, but didn't want the state to have to defend it in court. So the questions are, do these get to governor?
By the way, I'm going to tell you, that is shame on John Kasich.
I can't imagine that's the case, though. Now, North Carolina's got a Democrat governor,
right?
So that again, big question there.
And a Democrat AG, so I don't see Ron,
I think if this gets through in Florida, Ron DeSantis would support the state defending it. That's important. States like Florida, and now Ohio has a new governor. Again, the question's there. He was the attorney general, though. So was Mike DeWine advising Kasich not to do that, or is he changed? Would he again allow Ohio? Because you get Ohio's and Florida's in court. That's a big move.
A result to me. This is all a result of the view that the pro-abortion crowd feels like they're losing the Supreme Court, and that's why they're moving so aggressively in these states. What do you think, Abby?
Absolutely. I think this is a direct response to
that. And you think the same thing?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They see they're being empowered by Roe v. Wade in the sense that they're saying, well, the states have the right to legislate in this area. That's what Roe said. So let's do it. So the states that are liberal and the leftist states are enacting these anti-life statutes, this pro-abortion legislation, using the Supreme Court ruling in Roe v. Wade to their advantage and saying, if it says we can legislate, let's legislate.
And that's what they're doing.
And that's what they're doing.
Okay, so just so our team knows and people know what's going on here. So we've got a team alert. We responded to the Vermont situation aggressively. We're now looking at each one of these states and figuring out, and they talk a little bit about, we only got about a minute and a half left, about the FOIA requests. State FOIAs. These are not federal FOIAs. These are state FOIAs. What's going on there?
Okay, so we are issuing FOIA requests to many of these states that are pushing abortion without restrictions. And what we know with regards to some of these states is that Planned Parenthood is actually participating in the drafting of this legislation, which is not surprising.
Yes.
As is NARAL. And so we are issuing FOIA requests to uncover the communications that took place between the abortion industry and legislators as they're drafting this legislation. What was the intent behind it? What were the conversations that took place?
So this is at a state level. So understand what we're talking about. This is state restrictions or state moves to find out what's going on here. So we're responding to the states that allow us to submit comments. We're looking at every legal avenue, and we're finding out who is behind this. But this is, you talk about a grassroots battle, folks. This is going to be state by state, and just prepare yourself for that. We probably are getting some decision out of the Supreme Court later today, maybe tomorrow, on the case out of Louisiana on the life issue. We'll let you know on that. We may come back to you if we get something later today with a brief update, or we'll certainly let you know via social media. All right, we're taking a break. We come back. Border security, government shutdowns, what actually happens there? We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
Folks, again, we want to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Go to aclj.org as well. Information on those comments filed. We get all of that posted up at aclj.org. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And we're examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org.
I want to find the bite, actually. I'm going to do an audible here. We're going to have to find it, team. I want to find the bite where Nancy Pelosi says not $1 for the wall. We're going to find that bite. So there's negotiations going on, and those negotiations are a bipartisan group negotiating to see if we can avoid a shutdown, which we want your view on all of this. And the discussions are focusing on immigration reform and border security. Now, the president had a very successful speech. And, Jordan, your position is that that speech has changed some of the dynamic here.
Well, I think the approval rating, his approval rating's up at 50%. That was, you know, at the lowest, it was at 35%. That is very high for him, because we know he underpolls, that there are people still worried about saying, even on a phone poll, do you support the president? You know, it's not like you see the bumper stickers everywhere yet. He won this overwhelming, unbelievable election throughout the Midwest in states that Republicans haven't won in a long time.
Yep.
And the swing states weren't even close. So I think that the support received from that message, and part of that message included border barriers, but it also not just to keep people out for economic reasons, but also to stop sex traffickers and to stop drug traffickers and to stop the violent gangs as well. And so when you lay it out that way and say it's not just about stopping Mexicans from crossing the border for economic reasons, it's about stopping sex trafficking. And
I think that is very effective, by the way, because it's actually very true.
It's about crime as well.
We've been saying that.
He also talked about the trade issues. Those trade issues are why the unions are so quiet during these election cycles with the president's on the ballot. He has taken a very different position than past Republicans on trade by taking the trade war to China, and the Democrats had to stand and applaud that.
Which they did not want to do.
Of course they didn't want to do, but they have to applaud trade wars.
On the border security, we've been arguing for a long time because we drafted model legislation for all 50 states on the issue of sex trafficking and how to prosecute sex trafficking. And I want to set the stage a little bit for that, and we'll talk about these negotiations. But Andy, as a prosecutor, you know that the sex, and it's even in towns in South Georgia,
right,
the sex trafficking issue, there's not a state that you're listening, everybody that's listening right now, no matter where you are in the United States, this is an issue.
It's a terrible thing, and the president, I think, made that very clear. That our southern border is a conduit for that. And we see that in the smallest cities in South Georgia. I was involved in that. And the sex trafficking, particularly when it involves little children. This is women and children are really the victims of this. And they're sex slaves in enclaves in places that you would never imagine.
Here's what the president said on this the other night.
1 in 3 women is sexually assaulted on the long journey north. Smugglers use migrant children as human pawns to exploit our laws and gain access to our country. Human traffickers and sex traffickers take advantage of the wide open areas between our ports of entry to smuggle thousands of young girls and women into the United States and to sell them into prostitution and modern-day slavery.
So then how does Nancy Pelosi, if we know border security, including barriers and fences and smart walls and whatever you want to call it, would assist this? If it dropped at 30%, would you not spend $25 billion? If it dropped at 3%, would you not spend $25 billion to do that? Or are you going to be so stubborn that you're going to give the sex traffickers the ability to walk into the United States? Because believe me, you shut the supply off, guess what? They don't do it. So that's really, to me, is the fundamental question, Wes. It's when you talked about the wall as a national security issue, as a moral issue. Put aside the immigration side of it. Just the sex trafficking alone is enough of an issue.
Absolutely. And sex traffickers routinely use places where there is no barrier because it's hard to get a minor that you're not related to through the actual legal ports of entry. So they're using these open spaces. You know, it's very disingenuous and really it lacks compassion and kindness for Nancy Pelosi to say that building a wall is immoral. It is immoral not to build a wall. The Super Bowl was in Atlanta, my hometown, last week. And they were talking about the sex trafficking arrest that went on. There were literally, leading up to the Super Bowl and the months preparing for it, there were hundreds of young girls that were rescued from sex traffickers in the city of Atlanta, hundreds of them leading up to the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, they even had, they use truckers. I know we have a big audience on SiriusXM. And I know they tell you all, and I want to hear from the truckers on this. They tell you to be on the lookout for this. And a lot of you all have helped bust these rings. We'll take your calls on that at 1-800-684-3110. But I asked the question, Harry, not being rhetorical, but the fact is, how do they say no to that? If you take that as fact, which it is, and you can establish the facts and the numbers, how do you not justify spending $25 billion?
Well, I think you can't justify it rationally, but it's important to note that many Democrats, particularly in Congress, are not fond of veracity and a focus on rational analysis. Instead, they focus on duplicity. And it's very possible to note, as the president did in his State of the Union speech, that the whole issue of border security actually divides Americans between global elites on the coast, who seem to favor open borders, and working class Americans who are concerned about both their economic future and about human trafficking and sex trafficking, which plagues much of America. Many Democrats, at least in principle, oppose human trafficking, but they appear to disfavor laws which would stop human trafficking when and if President Trump supports it.
And this is,
so this makes little rational sense.
But you'd think, Jordan, the reaction, and we'll, I'm going to do this in the second half hour because we need to set this up a little bit. The whole change of tone with now this bipartisan group, Nancy Pelosi, you know, initially saying not a dollar for the wall. I'm going to play that in the next segment. And then saying now whatever they come up with, I'm going to agree to. You think that State of the Union message was that effective?
I do. I think that they may have decided, okay, this is not an issue we want our candidates to have to deal with, and whoever the actual candidate is. They thought they had President Trump on the ropes with the shutdown that lasted over 30 days. They were reminded of his effectiveness that night, and Nancy Pelosi with the front row seat, literally, had to see, okay, and then she's looking at her field, which is just going around apologizing for things they've done. And the mess in Virginia, and all Democrats, and a mess in North Carolina with their governor having to respond to these issues, and Elizabeth Warren going on an apology tour, and still hedging whether or not, by the way, she now thinks she wasn't a tribal member.
Right.
They're still trying to elect. We know from that test she put out. I mean, it is getting to the point where
it's absurd.
They got the Beto O'Rourke problems. And
That looks like we're going to save all the good. This is the stuff for the next half hour. This is where if you're a conservative, sometimes you know what you want to do. Say nothing. Just watch.
Let
what happens.
MSNBC take down all of their candidates.
Which we're even watching right this moment.
Right now, I mean, literally, they're taking down their own party because sometimes that's necessary. Each movement has to. I think the left has been trying to do that slowly with the Democrat Party, and Nancy Pelosi probably sees that writing on the wall, but she wants to survive through her career as Speaker. So.
Had an impact on border security.
Yeah, it did.
That same CBS YouGov poll that said that most people approved of his speech, they asked the question, is border security an important issue? And 71% of the respondents said, yes, border security is important.
So this is what we want to know from you. Is border security an issue for you? 1-800-684-3110. How important is it? Are you willing to negotiate on immigration reform? As part of that, 1-800-684-3110. We're coming back for another 30 minutes of the broadcast. All you have to do is go over to ACLJ.org. We're streaming it there. Also, Facebook, Periscope, and a lot of other social media platforms and television networks. But also, SiriusXM, of course, and a lot of your radio stations. Give us a call, 800-684-3110. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org.
From Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
You know, the State of the Union speech seems like it was a week ago, but it was actually 48 hours ago. And there's been a complete political shift in 48 hours. I mean, a complete political shift on the issue of border security, immigration reform, and a host of other issues. So you've seen this complete shift. I mean, you got Adam Schiff saying, well, I'm not going to look at Russia so much right now. I'm going to try to look at the Trump family businesses. That's the political shift happening there. You got Nancy Pelosi saying, I'm not going to give a dollar, not $1 for border security, for a barrier. I'm not going to give you one nickel. Here's what she said. Remember this?
Is there any situation in which you would accept even a dollar of wall funding for this president in order to reopen the government?
A dollar? $1. Yeah, $1.
How high would you have going to go? Are you going to go?
No, no. You said a dollar. You said a dollar.
How high are you going to go?
Well, that's not your question. You said a dollar.
The fact is, a wall
is an immorality.
Wall is an immorality. We just, in the last half segment of the program, we just talked about the fact that sex trafficking coming from our southern border is a huge problem, and there's no question border security, including barriers and walls, would help that. Now, take that. That was what she said. That was before the State of the Union message. Now, when they've got negotiations going on, here's what she said.
I told him, whatever you all come to agreement on, bipartisan agreement, I will support. I hope that the administration would have the same attitude and respect the appropriations process. Of course, I'm an appropriator, and I know they can find agreement.
So, what does that tell you, Jordan?
It tells me that she's going to say that they're not funding a full wall. And her new definition of a wall is the 2,000-mile concrete barrier. And these are border situations.
She's going to call them border enhancements.
If this committee actually comes up with this. Now, I mean, there's still an if. I think she's still hedging a bit on that no bipartisan committee can come up with anything.
Shelby says it's pretty close.
He says it's close, but I mean, hello, we are six working days away.
I think they're going to come with it. Harry, what do you think?
I think they will. I think the Democrats face a seismic shift in terms of voter sentiment and voter approval of enhanced border security. And so I think Leader Pelosi is facing a new reality on the ground, and she is possibly frightened of the fact that the ground has shifted so rapidly in such a short period of time. Meanwhile, as Jordan correctly points out, Democratic aspirants for president have virtually all gone on an apology tour. The Democrats have been bloodied by the events in Virginia.
How do you think the Virginia situation, I will call it, is affecting the national politics?
Well, I think it exposes, this is just my personal opinion, the Democrats to the justifiable charge of hypocrisy. And I won't go into great detail on the issues that Virginia confronts, but it's very important to note that the Democrats have always vacillated on the issue of race, and they have used race when it supports their long-term political interests, but they kind of backed away from judging racism that's internal within their own party, and I think the American electorate is seeing hypocrisy unfold in front of their own eyes. And I think that has provided a basis for something that I thought almost impossible, new humility on the part of Democrats and left-wingers. I also think the president did a fantastic job in exposing the socialist bent of the Democrats as well in the state of
Union.
We're
going to get into that as well because, you know, some of the commentators said, well, these people like Bernie Sanders and others have not said that they're socialists, and then they registered as socialists. So, I mean, this is, you know, the president pointed it out. They've got a real, this is a very interesting, Wes, really quickly, a very interesting political time.
It very is.
Because there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, you correctly said a moment ago, there is a seismic shift. And I think the scandals in the Democrat Party, border security, the whole abortion thing, there are so many things at play here.
Yeah, I think it's a lot. All right, we're going to come back and take a break. 1-800-684-3110. You're the importance of the issue of border security. The importance of what you see happening after the State of the Union. How important do you think that speech was? The situation in Virginia. What is the national impact of that? We'll talk about all that.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions, and for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, ACLJ.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Well, for those of you that are not on Facebook, Periscope, or other social media platforms listening to the broadcast, we had an interesting conversation during the break here, and that is what's happening. Is what's happening in Virginia coupled with what has happened in since the State of the Union, and now the negotiations. How does all this play in, you know, geopolitically? So we're taking your calls on that if you want to engage what you think the issues are, 1-800-684-3110. But you said something that I want to go back to, Wes, and that is we just played the Nancy Pelosi sound bites where she is clearly giving herself some room. And you talked about, you know, part of politics is face saving. Go ahead.
Yeah, it really is. And she, if nothing else, she is a very, very effective politician. She claims to be, and she truly is. But I think, you know, she being a good politician, she's sensing that things are changing, and some of the memento, you know, on border security, you know, and the critical mass is changing. And to the president's credit, he's the one that he kept hammering at this issue over and over. He keeps it in front of the American people, and I think that's having an impact and influence. But in her remarks that we played, again, part of politics. And she realizes this is at some point you have to save face and then declare victory. And maybe she's leaning that direction.
What do you think, Jordan?
I do. I think that she's opened the door to it, knowing that you could question right now whether a bipartisan committee can do anything. So can they really come to an agreement that they're going to put out? Even though with Senator Shelby says they're close, that does not mean it's done. And so is there anything Republicans and Democrats can put out and endorse together on this issue? So I think she's hedging a little bit that this won't even happen. And then if it does, got to let it move forward for a vote. Now, that does not mean she'll support it.
She says, though, I'll support it. She says,
supporting it for speaker means letting it come to a vote, I think.
Yep.
It does not necessarily mean the Democrats won't whip the vote against it. And they have the majority. I don't know that it would.
But if we take the approach, which I think is should have always been the approach, that the sex trafficking, Andy, something you've dealt with as a prosecutor,
yes,
is a significant issue, then the $25 billion really looks like nothing.
It is nothing. I mean, it's a fraction of the whole budget. But and we know that the Democrats are opposing the expenditure of that minuscule, comparatively minuscule amount of money in the national in the totality of the national budget is politically motivated, and a wall, a barrier, some kind of enhanced security is going to stop the sex trafficking. They're going to be forced, screaming and yelling, to come to that conclusion, and I think Pelosi has left the door open for embracing that if the appropriators recommend it.
All right, so I'm going to go back to Harry on the Virginia situation. So let's talk about this for a moment. I don't, without getting into the particulars, there's been all these allegations. There's all these, you know, there aren't an apology. Elizabeth Warren also now apologizing. Senator Harris apologizing for her actions as a prosecutor. That's what she's basically apologizing for. When you look at what's happening politically, and it's happened in a very short period of time. I mean, this has happened literally within days. I mean, the whole situation in Virginia started about a week and a half ago. Well, it'd be 2 weeks Friday. Yeah, it'd be 2 weeks tomorrow. 2 weeks ago is when, and it was on the life issue. And then, you know, Jordan pointed out during the break, and we'll have him do that in a minute, where that all came from. But how do you see, as a political scientist looking at it, what's happening?
Well, number one, I would say that the Democrats are realizing that many of their approaches are beginning to backfire with the American people. And I think one of the most helpful developments in exposing the Democrats on a variety of issues was President Trump's State of the Union speech. But if we focus solely on Virginia, we find that at least on the surface level, there may indeed be clear and unmistakable evidence of racism that is endemic within the Democratic Party. And so if you look at the whole history of race relations in the United States, it's a troubled history. But if you look at that entire history, it's impossible to deny that many Democrats, particularly in the state of Virginia where I used to live, were front and center in supporting racial segregation, led by individuals like Harry Byrd. It's also important to note that Virginia was a leading state in the 1930s in support of eugenics legislation, which then circles back to the current governor, because he placed himself in jeopardy in part because he supported some version of infanticide, which many progressives actually supported essentially in the 1930s. It's important to note, as a matter of fact, that Carrie Buck's reproductive capacity was taken away from her by the state of Virginia.
Famous Supreme Court case,
in
right.
Buck v. Bell. That case and the laws generated, if you will, by that decision, it's still good law. The Supreme Court has never directly overturned Buck v. Bell. That was a deliberate decision.
This is a very important point historically. Explain that case, what it involved.
Well, essentially, the state of Virginia engaged in a deliberate campaign of labeling individuals as less than normal and of normal intelligence. And they took the view, a view that unfortunately the Nazis also began to subscribe to, is that if you could eliminate those individuals, particularly their DNA, you could improve the genetic stock of humanity. And so they labeled Carrie Buck as a mentally disabled, defective individual, even though there is no specific evidence on the record in support of that claim.
None.
And they created a test case. They wanted this case to go to the United States Supreme Court to clear a pathway so that they could eliminate all so-called human defectives from the state of Virginia.
Who are the human defectives under in the state of Virginia's view?
Well, in general, it was individuals who were of below average intelligence, but it also, and this is perhaps the racial part, it included individuals that were seen as less than disfavored, including many members of minority groups. It's historic, but you should also note that it took until, I think, 1976 until the state of North Carolina abolished its own similar law. And guess what? The Democrats were in charge of the state up until the 70s or 80s. So it is clear beyond question that the Democratic Party has a heck of a lot to apologize for. And so when they continually bombard this president and they bombard Republicans claiming that they support all forms of discrimination, guess what? Their own history is coming back to bite them. And so it's impossible for me to deny a bit of Schadenfreude because they are being attacked by their own history. And I certainly would encourage the American people to look into the history of the Democratic Party. And there, I think you will see the face of racism, sexism, and a support for eugenics. It's all throughout the history of the Democratic Party.
I'm going to recommend to our staff that we clip what Harry just said and send that out on all of our platforms this afternoon or tomorrow. Just this segment, this portion. Because I think that was very, very powerful. So you take that, and then you look at the body politic, and then you've had a seismic shift in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks, you've changed all these debates. Life, race, border security, what does that mean? Is it anti-immigrant? No, it's actually pro-immigrant because it would be coupled with reforms that would allow people to come out of the shadows in our own country and more legal immigration to the United States by improving the court systems to allow that. More immigration judges.
So this is in a two-week period of time.
Yeah, the whole ball has shifted. I still don't think that this means that heading into 2020, you're going to see everybody with Donald Trump signs in their front yard.
No, I understand.
Because that's why his approval rating, I think, if it hovers even close to 50%, which is what it's at right now,
which means it's 49%, about
62%, yeah. No one can defeat that.
No.
Because that means that, we're forgetting he's also speaking to the labor blue-collar community. He's talking about trade. You couple all these issues together, he's taking issues away from them. He's taking issues away from Democrat socialists when he talks about those trade issues. Because the truth is, it's much tougher for the AFL-CIO and the Teamsters to come out strongly opposed to someone who is renegotiating trade deals.
Yeah. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, you know, the objections of the progressives about border security, you know, is really, it's very hollow objections. You look at what the president has asked for. He's asked for humanitarian aid, $800 million worth, for the people waiting on the border, as well as, you know, the anti-sex trafficking, the drug cartels, you know, national security. He's asked for 75 more immigration judges. He is really, truly trying to fix this. And so the objections from Nancy Pelosi and the others are really, really beginning to sound hollow and insincere.
I think if you're looking at this from a political scientist perspective, I think you're going to look at this two-week period in our history, and it's going to be dramatic, Andy. I really think it is.
I think it is.
Moments matter. We talk about that a lot of things, but moments
does.
Matter.
And I think the catalyst was the abortion situations that we talked about in New York and in Virginia, but the capping thing was the tremendous impact that the State of the Union address the president made.
All right, we'll take your calls when we come back from the break and your comments on Facebook and Periscope, 1-800-684-3110.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The State of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. It even removes legal protections for babies born alive from botched abortions. Now other states are trying to do the same thing. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've assembled our team to fight back. We're preparing to send Freedom of Information Act letters in an effort to expose exactly how involved Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry were in pushing this new law forward. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. We're mobilizing to ensure that these laws cannot be used to target pro-life doctors and nurses and force them to perform abortions. And for examining other legal angles as other states look to pass similar laws. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. We've had fascinating conversations today. I think it's been a very enlightening program. But we just had a very important conversation during the break, so I want it for our radio audience now as well. Very important to understand here. You've seen this is a moment in history where there's been a political seismic shift that has taken place, and you've seen it unfold over a 2-week period. Professor Archon just gave an eloquent response on what the history of this is in Virginia, and other states as well. And is a precursor to eugenics. So we're all acting shocked about this. And by the way, a lot of us up here have spent a lot of time living in Virginia, including Professor Hutchinson. We've lived in Virginia, and it's a beautiful state, a commonwealth. And I will tell you this: you also spent time up in Virginia as well, Wes.
Right.
So, and Andy spent a lot of time in Virginia. So, having said that, what's happened in Virginia has had a dramatic impact on the rest of the country. And Jordan, I want you to say what you said just moments ago.
I actually think it did start in Virginia. Okay. I think what happened was New York passed a law, and Andrew Cuomo, the governor, I said Chris in the brain, it's Chris's brother on CNN.
Right.
Andrew Cuomo, the governor, decided not just to have the law passed and, okay, let it move forward. And it might have, in New York, you know what, a pro-abortion law getting passed by the state legislature and signed by that governor, not such a big deal. But instead, he decides to have a celebration. And he brings Hillary Clinton back. Well, then now you brought back the last presidential candidate, a Clinton. So what is this law about? Everybody starts diving into it. That allows abortion, no restrictions, no criminal penalties at all. And then we start looking at other states. So Virginia is putting forward the same kind of law. And then we look at the delegate who's proposing it. And she's saying you can have an abortion while the baby is being during labor.
And as she's saying it, she's realizing she can't even believe she just said it.
So, and then the governor of Virginia, who is a pediatric surgeon, Democrat, pro-abortion, goes on a radio show and says you could have the child delivered and decide whether or not to resuscitate it and then to kill it again. And when he's asked if he wanted to clarify it, did he just kind of misstate that? He says no. A day later, it comes out, he's got on his yearbook page someone is dressed up as a KKK member in his medical school yearbook from 1984. It's not high school, not college, medical school. He says that was him in one of those. Then he says it wasn't one of him, but then goes back and says, but he did do blackface in 1984. Okay, so then you have who's next in Virginia? Lieutenant governor. He's now been accused of sexual assault. And the attorney general next in line, these are all Democrats.
Who called for the resignation of the governor.
Yes, he's also been in blackface in the 1980s. In 1980, actually, while he was at UVA. And these are all Democrats. The fourth in line is a Republican.
Who's saying nothing.
And again, in a state that I think tries to – but I think it all ties back to New York. We know that Northam was exposed. His yearbook was exposed because of people upset about his comments who were at the medical school,
right,
and knew that this existed, knew it could bring his gubernatorial – listen, if the lieutenant governor didn't have this problem, I don't think Northam would be there today. And then if the attorney general didn't have this problem, Northam probably wouldn't be there today. But now you'd have to give it to a Republican. So will Democrats look like the bizarre, if you want to say, racist supporting or abortion, you know, supporting outside of the womb, infanticide? Are they going to go with this? And I think that's freaked them out, leading into the State of the Union, where a president they perceived was weak after the shutdown has now come back stronger. The same time, the Intelligence Committee, led by Adam Schiff, says they're moving on from Russia.
Right.
I mean, this is all happening in the last 24 hours. They're trying to say it as we're expanding our investigation. If they lose on the Russia issue, they've also lost to their base. So they're losing a lot of base issues.
Yep.
And this is also, President, I didn't get to say this a lot. You put all the things together he's doing. He's ending wars. Obama didn't end wars. And when he tried to in Iraq, it was done in a really bizarre way. But Afghanistan, there was no wind down there. We actually have negotiations going on, supported by the U.S., between the Taliban and the Afghan government right now, on how to get out of Afghanistan long term. In Syria, all this is happening. I mean, they said that the last major group of ISIS fighters is begging for a ceasefire. They have a hostage. And so they're begging for a ceasefire because if they're fired on, that's it. That would be it. So, I mean,
The caliphate's gone. A year and a half ago, we were talking about the caliphate. It is gone.
Yeah.
Because the president actually let the military do
Islamic terrorism.
Of course.
And I think they try to criticize the president and say, oh, he's saying that's over. No, that's not over. What is over is
the caliphate.
Who cares about their land power anymore? They no longer govern.
They're not that's what we said. The difference between Al-Qaeda and ISIS was operating more like Hamas. They were governing.
They might turn into an Al-Qaeda type entity, and you fight that differently.
By the way, President Trump's nominee for Attorney General, Bill Barr, was approved out of the Senate Judiciary Committee just moments ago. Excellent candidate. He will be a great Attorney General. He's already been an Attorney General. He's an excellent Attorney General and is in for round two as Attorney General. It's an unusual situation where you have it twice, but that I wanted to report that. I think this is a moment in history here, folks, that I think you're going to realize something's happened. I mean, and I think, again, the life issue has been the catalyst for a lot of political change in this country. As it's like kind of the civil rights movement. These movement, my PhD dissertation was on key moments in our history and the impact that ended up having on the Supreme Court. And if you look, you know, Andy, you and I talk about this in the spiritual context. So, you know, places matter, moments matter, symbolism matters.
Symbolism has a great deal to do, and matter and sacred places and sacred spaces and points in time that are turning points in history. In retrospect, you see those to be turning points in history. I don't want to overstate it because it's very easy to make that statement when you're in the present. But looking back, I think decades from now, it's going to be seen that the life issue was and should be the catalyst for all the other social change that we see taking place.
I will say this also, that in conversations I had at my house, we talked about the beginning of some of the Christian involvement in the political process in the 1980s, and the abortion issue was a big catalyst of that. But it seems like that these catalyst moments happen, and then entire movements start organically, which is what's happening.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I think Andrew Cuomo, he's already, I mean, this is still going on. New York Times, he had to write yesterday defending his law because of the Catholic opposition which is mostly Democrat and Catholic.
By the way, the New York Times on Sunday said 2020 Democrats agree. They're very, very sorry.
But so he tries to say it's all about the religious right. And I think, you know, 70% of Americans are opposed to partial birth abortion, late-term abortion. That is a lot more than the 30% of Americans who identify as evangelicals. And the religious right is a made-up, you know, the scare tactic term now used.
Yep.
So they're having to figure out, they're having to double, triple down on these laws. The more you have Andrew Cuomo talking about killing babies and late-term abortion, he may get you reelected forever in New York. But most of the country doesn't want to be New York and California. They don't want to be on the edge of moral decision-making gray areas. They want to have right and wrong, and they want it defined by the law.
Yeah, just in the last 2 weeks, I think the American conscience has been shocked by the existence of ugly racism in the Democrat Party in Virginia, by a Virginia governor saying that after the baby was born, they would keep the baby comfortable while they decided whether or not they were going to kill it. And then also you look at the moral issue on the border, that really the moral thing to do is to support those who are trying to cross legally and to rescue those who are being brought across by human traffickers. The American people have had a wake-up call.
Harry, do you think it's a wake-up call?
Absolutely. I think in a short period of time, we've seen a seismic shift, which has linked the issues of abortion, eugenics, and race inextricably, they're all linked, and the tenor and tone of the national conversation has changed.
That does it for the broadcast today, and what a broadcast it's been, I will say. We will have more on this. We may get some Supreme Court orders later today. If we do, we'll come to you with a brief update. We'll certainly be able to talk about it tomorrow. Remember, support the work of the ACLJ. You do that at aclj.org.
The state of New York just passed one of the most barbaric abortion laws in U.S. history, essentially making it legal to abort a baby at any stage of pregnancy up to the moment of birth. We're looking at every possible way to challenge the New York law. You can make a tremendous difference in this fight to protect life. Add your name today to our petition to expose and defeat barbaric abortion laws. Online, AC.